Big Show brought to you by The Comedy Cave. Laugh in 2015 at the New Year's Eve Gala. Dinner shows feature three of North America's funniest comics, just $48 per person. Get your tickets now at comedycave.com.
Well, it happened training at home. I wasn't training smart. Just pushed myself a little too hard, and then that's how it happened. And unfortunately, that's a tough thing to take. You know, you just want to do well, and then something like that happens. I didn't expect it to take 4 months to heal either when I felt it. So it's been tough, but finally I'm getting close.
Michael Backlund speaking to the media earlier today. He's been skating for the last couple of days, gingerly. I wouldn't say he's gone all out yet, but this is a guy that, you know, it's been kind of hit and miss, Pat. At first, wondered how long it would be. Sounds like he anticipates rejoining the team this year. I know there was some concern at some point it might shut him down for a year, but it sounds like he will be back.
It does, just no timeline.
Right.
And he said today, I don't even want to think about ballparking it. He's been skating for 3 days and no word. Like, are we talking February? Are we talking, New Year, like early New Year? Who knows at this point? I think a lot of it is going to be not just the recovery of the actual procedure he had, which he said was arthroscopic. It's more going to be getting his conditioning back and getting his game speed back, because he's missed a lot of time and hasn't been able to really do much. He's only been able to get back to even exercising in the last 3 weeks because he had to be immobile. It was that mm-hmm. big a deal. So that's going to be the biggest thing. That's going to be the biggest hurdle and challenge for him. And when he comes back, man, am I fascinated as to how this whole thing looks for the Flames. Again, I'm not going to get too worked up about numbers, just because we know that injuries are going to happen. It might not be as difficult as it looks right now to get him back in, but I'm fascinated as to how it might look and how that might all play out, because he's an important player on this team, and if mm-hmm. Michael Backlund's at 100%, he comes back and makes this team a better team, no doubt about it in my mind.
Will he be 100%? Is this the type of injury that you can, it's not a high ankle sprain, but the old adage about the high ankle sprain, it almost takes a full year after the recovery before you get back to 100%. Curious to see when he does come back what he will look like. The NHL roster freeze goes at midnight local time tonight. Is in place until the 27th, not able to bring and move players around, not able to trade them, which is probably why, and a good reason why, we've seen a number of players getting assigned to their World Junior clubs and in some cases not getting assigned. And we talked about Leon Draisaitl. I'm willing to come off of that. I know I went after Edmonton pretty hard, but there might be, as you say, he's been before. There's reasons. There's always mm-hmm. reasons. Another curious one was Burakovsky in Washington. Andrei Burakovsky was reassigned to the American Hockey League today. Now drafted out of Europe, so they have the flexibility of doing that. 13 points in 26 games, averaging just about 13 minutes a game. Yeah, and I believe he's Swedish, right?
This is off the top of my head.
Chose not to loan him out to the World Junior Team. Instead, he goes down to their American League affiliate. Now, Ottawa lent Lazar. We mentioned Mirko Mueller from San Jose. He was not playing a lot. He's going to go represent his country for the third time. Philadelphia and Boston. Pasternak, I believe, got lent out. Hag got lent out by Philadelphia. So these are all just happening here in the last couple of days, which will certainly, from a tournament standpoint, won't hurt.
Agreed. And I was curious about Mirko Mueller going for San Jose, because when the Sharks were here, he was on the roster. He was practicing with them, didn't play. He was a healthy scratch and all of that. But they're pretty happy and pretty excited about what Mirko Mueller is. So I wondered, because he's been to a number of them before too, I wondered if maybe they would have kept him around the team. It's not like this will be a new experience for him as a 19-year-old. So that one, I'm not saying they're wrong or anything like that. I'm just, I think it's funny, not funny, but interesting that they decided to let him go back and let him play there once again. So it's all situational. Each team has a different philosophy on it. The whole thing is always intriguing to me, and I still think that the Sean Monahan debate was one of the more interesting ones in recent years, not just because it was here in Calgary, but because there were interesting arguments on both sides. Yeah. You and I ended up on the same side of the argument, but I remember talking to Labardius about it last year.
And
not just because he's a world junior guy, but you know, he made a lot of good points as to why he might benefit from going and playing in that tournament.
Yeah, and there were some in the organization that felt he should have gone. You know, they wouldn't... You know, it's a once-in-a-lifetime that it's, you know, something that you'll always remember, which I don't disagree. Sean would eventually go on to play for the World Championship team, so represent his country. But I don't, you know, I don't think either one of us are of the opinion that that's the same thing. World Junior Tournament is just a different animal. And as I said before, so much of that lays at the feet of TSN for what they've created there. It's disproportionate here as opposed to the rest of the world.
Any other country.
Right. And then the same thing. The World Championships are disproportionate in other countries than they are here.
Sweden and Finland, it's
a big deal.
It's a huge deal. Finland beat Sweden in the World Championships a couple years ago. Like, that was a national pride moment for the country of Finland. They beat their big brother, and they were able to win on the world stage and all of that. So absolutely, it's a different animal in this country. And they've tried to make it a big deal in the United States, but it just isn't the same thing. And they certainly have put a ton of resources into that program. But in terms of its perception, no. Nowhere but here is it this big.
Canada starts their pre-tournament games tonight. They'll play a handful of those. They kick off on Boxing Day. What has been somewhat noticeable to me, and maybe I'm not listening to the right keyholes or reading the right things, but expectations are muted. And I mean muted. I haven't heard any. What is the expectation for Team Canada? I know they don't go in expecting to just walk over the opponents. We have that conversation. When's the last time they easily won this tournament? Now, they won it recently, not real recently, but recently. They had a nice run there, but there always seemed to be some hurdle. There always seemed to be something in the way.
Now, from my perception, now this would not be the same perception as others, but from mine, seems like the vibe in this tournament is kind of similar to what it's been the last couple of years because of what you just mentioned.
Right.
When they do win, it's not easy, and they haven't won in a little while here. And so I kind of get the feeling that going in that, you know, the vibe is it's going to be tough, and this is going to be a very tough tournament. And I don't know if the expectation is ever going to be again that the Canadians go in and just win. And I mean, the expectation from Hockey Canada is always going to be that. They only have one expectation. But I wonder from even the most passionate of the Canadian hockey supporters, if there is that just, we're winning this tournament. I don't think that's ever going to be there again, because Sweden, the United States, Finland, Switzerland, obviously Russia, that there's so little between even these programs. Their top junior programs are so close to one another that to sit there and just blindly think that because you're Canada, that used to be the case. It's not really that case anymore.
Well, it used to be the case, but I don't think it was the actual reality either, though. It has not been the reality for a long time.
I think when you win five in a row, it really starts to almost feel like that's the reality.
But the dominant one was 05, right? The dominant one was the lockout when you had Crosby and when you had Patrice Bergeron and you had a handful of guys that would have been in the
03 draft class was basically all there.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, so I answer my own question. When's the last time they were really the dominant team? They were really dominant in that tournament.
Yes.
Really dominant in that tournament. They have had dominant performances. I mean, you know, there have been some just terrific performances over the years. But it's been a long time since they went in as the prohibitive favorite. And they certainly don't go into this tournament as the prohibitive favorite. You look on the back end, goaltending, Zach Fucali. Do you see Fucali, Fucali got traded today?
Mm-hmm.
Traded from Charlottetown to Quebec. So he, I think Josh Morrissey was one of those guys. Jerome McGinley got traded at that tournament. So the starting goalie for Canada might have a little bit on his mind, but there's going to be a lot of eyes on that position. And they only took two to camp.
Yep.
They just took Fucali and Cormier.
Now, no competition in net.
No, they made up their minds on that.
Yep.
The Americans are going to come in with a pretty interesting blue line, I would say. You know, there's some big bodies and some pretty big names on that blue line. Now, Connor McDavid, what's a reasonable expectation for one of the, you know, Jack Eichel's in this tournament too, but let's talk about Connor McDavid as a generational player. What's a reasonable expectation for him?
Well, I think that you may have to temper your expectations because he'll basically be restarting his season on Boxing Day, or maybe depending on what the pre-tournament schedule looks like. But, I mean, he'll basically be restarting his schedule when it comes to the World Junior Hockey Championships, because he hasn't played for a number of weeks since suffering the broken hand. And so that's why I wonder if maybe you do temper your expectations a little bit. I wonder if he's fully healthy, doesn't suffer the injury, if he doesn't have one of those tournaments to remember.
Right.
But because he'll be getting his legs back and all of that, that may not be the case. So that would be my expectations for McDavid. I'm tempering them a little bit. I'm not as, you know, I think he's still going to be an outstanding player. I still think he's going to be great, and by the time we get to the games that matter, he'll be one of, if not the most important players on the team. But in terms of his overall points and the overall tournament that we remember, I don't know if it is going to be as good as it could have been just because of the circumstances.
As mentioned, starts tonight. And, of course, the tournament itself, the pre-tournament games start tonight. The tournament itself starts on Boxing Day for Canada. Oh, there's no doubt we're going to be talking about this one. Jake Virtanen, there's going to be some Calgary connections there in terms of a member of the Calgary Hitmen. Very light tournament for Flames prospects, mm-hmm. correct?
Not a lot. Klimchuk, obviously not for Team Canada. There's Rafikov for the Russians.
Right.
Ekman, what's his Oldis Mattsson, I was going to call him Ekman Larson. Oldis Mattsson is not on the Swedish team.
He's not, eh?
No, so okay. That's kind of what
so,
she looks like right now.
There's one. So from that perspective, there's a little less interest probably for the outsider mm-hmm. who would usually use his club team as the conduit to this.
Exactly.
We will take a break. Do you mind if we shift gears a little bit? Can we shift gears a little bit? Can we talk a little baseball when we come back?
I thought you were asking me if you could shift gears to drop cam.
I can do that,
you can
too.
Do that
I can do that,
you can
too.
Do that seamlessly.
Well, I can seamlessly because I just happen to have it in front of me.
What
drop cam.
What are you talking about with baseball around the corner?
Oh, sure. Sure, I want to talk about it's been a busy couple of days in baseball. Been a couple of busy couple of weeks in baseball. Like we normally talk on Fridays about the San Diego Padres. Why wouldn't we talk about the San Diego Padres?
Good question.
But you mentioned DropCam. Thank you for doing that. If you are in the moment and thinking, well, I've left it to the last minute, I'm not going to be able to get a really good Christmas gift. Aha! You're wrong. That's where DropCam comes in. Check it out, DropCam.com or Best Buy and Future Shop. For those who are traveling at Christmas, what a great little peace of mind. You can just set it up as long as you got Wi-Fi and some power in your house. You can set up DropCam. You can put it wherever you want. If you've been hearing the ads as well, don't forget the Nest is now involved. The Nest is yet another part of the DropCam family. So you have the ability to secure your house. You also have the ability to monitor and run your house correctly. And how I mean that is Nest gives you the ability to set temperatures and keep, you know, the furnace turn down. You're not wasting energy while you're away. DropCam allows you to make sure nothing else is going on. You can get emails directly to your phone. Heck, you can watch your DropCam on your phone. To check out the Nest, to check out DropCam, go to DropCam.com or see them both in person at Best Buy and Future Shop. A little Major League Baseball talk when we come back around the corner here on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
If it's on the 200 by 85, it's right here first. Calgary's home for the National Hockey League. Sportsnet 960, The Fan. Calgary, the boys on the big show are talking sports right now. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
MLB is going to want to, on some level, seize upon this diplomatic opportunity that's existing now between the countries to perhaps get a bit more order and a bit more access and also potentially a bit more cost certainty in dealing with the Cuban market.
John Paul Morosi talking on our sister station, Fan 590. It's a little bit of the politics of the world coming into the backyard of Major League Baseball. I do want to talk about the San Diego Padres and some of the moves that they've been making. But, Pat, the United States' decision to normalize relations with Cuba, it's obviously meeting with some resistance in political corners. But one area they won't meet resistance in is Major League Baseball. And, you know, John Paul talks about it, that, look, MLB would love to kind of get a rein in the relationship between Major League Baseball and the Cuban baseball player. Because right now, it's shady. I mean, it's shady at best. You know, there's a couple of players we're talking under the cover of darkness and handlers and those types of things. We're also talking
ransoms
and things like that. We're also talking about, I wouldn't say like a new, I don't think there's going to be an explosion of Cuban players coming into the major leagues, but it certainly will be easier and there will be more over time. The other thing that will be interesting is the flip side of this. If you do normalize relations with Cuba and you do create an agreement here, Cuban players will be able to go back and play for their country. And the thought of an actual Cuban national team with the talent that they produce, that's something to behold. I mean, in many ways, does this not remind you of the Russian hockey player in the early 90s? Late 80s, early 90s?
A little bit, like kind of right when it was starting to get to the point where, all right, Berlin Wall is about to fall and it's about to become a capitalist nation and all of that.
It certainly
has that kind of feel to it. Now, I don't know if that's exactly what we're talking about. Like, I don't know if the political climate in Cuba itself is that, but the implication on sports is absolutely very comparable.
With the one difference being that there has been a trickle, right? I mean, very few Russians, you know, came over, Priyakin, and then one more, and then they came over, right? There was kind of that deluge, and then it was normal. There have been Cuban players on a fairly steady basis coming over and playing in the major leagues. I was just looking for the number I had here a little while ago. You know, even in recent times, there have been players that have been able to come over and get involved, and fairly significant players.
Yep.
So it won't be as if all of a sudden the wall comes down and there's a deluge, but there will be more. And they will, you know, again, prop up, is that the right word? You know, one of the things you talk to people in baseball, there's a problem with development. There's, you know, the prospects are very limited as opposed to where they were 20 years ago, 30 years ago. This is going to help put some pretty interesting prospects into the system.
Yeah, I'm just curious as to how this whole thing would then start to kind of change how baseball and baseball teams go about their business, like change their drafting. And because right now, you know, Cuban player comes out, there's a bidding war.
Yep.
And there's so how does that change? How does that all, you know, does the CBA have to be rewritten? All that type of stuff. I'm curious as to what the overall baseball implications would be, because Major League Baseball as a whole would love to take advantage of it, but what would the effect be on the individual Major League Baseball team? What effect does that have on Alex Anthopoulos and the Toronto Blue Jays? How does he go about business differently because all of a sudden the relations have normalized and you are able to do this without so much political red tape?
Good question.
And I don't know the answer to it,
no,
but I'm curious.
And you know, if you think, is this going to, you know, is this going to stop the bidding and types of, well, not really, because look what happens for players out of the Orient, for Japanese players and Korean players and stuff. Today's the last day for Kang, I believe is his name, for his bidding. You know, you still have, there's no real kind of normalization of, you know, the players coming out of Japan or Korea. For the record, last year, opening day, there were 19 Cuban players on big league rosters. According to Grantland, there have been 255 Cuban players that have defected in recent years. So they're already in the system. I'm not sure how many. There obviously, there's some more. But with that political hot potato going on, mm-hmm. you can bet that Major League Baseball is licking their chops. You know, and even let's say, you know, we get to a situation where the wall comes down and stuff like that, there's another marketplace for Major League Baseball to sell its wares over time. Not right away, but it'll be curious to see what effect baseball has in terms of this one political story.
Yeah, it's quite interesting. And I don't know. I mean, I don't know if, you know, all of a sudden things change. You're right. In Japan and Korea and stuff like that, we still do see bidding wars. But does Major League Baseball try to capitalize on that so that maybe they write something in where there's not bidding wars, or they try to normalize the amount of money that's being spent on because they're no longer defecting per se. It's now totally okay for these players to do this. So it is fascinating to me, and so many unanswered questions. I don't know the answer to any of them. I don't know if it would stay the same as it is now.
Well,
I don't know if it would be similar to Japan and Korea or how it would go.
Right. Well, it's the byproduct, because when I first heard about the normalization of relations, it's, you know, more of a geopolitical thing. Mm-hmm. And then you go, whoa, wait a minute, what about baseball? because I've talked to some people who vacation, and there was a great article written in Sportsnet magazine a little while ago about going down and watching Cuban Bay. I mean, it's big.
Yeah.
It's a big thing. And it might be the link. Sports has often been the link in things. I'm curious what role baseball has in this, whether or not this, if nothing else, hopefully they can get to a point where we're done with people on rafts, that there's a way of, you know, doing this in a safe fashion. And I, as a baseball fan, and I know the World Classic and things like that, and the No More Olympics and stuff like that, it's hard to find international baseball. But the thought of the Cubans being able to, you know, to field a team of their best would intrigue me at something like the World Cup. That would certainly add another wrinkle to it. Meanwhile, winter meetings are over, but Major League Baseball player movement is continuing to move at a rapid pace. The Blue Jays did a little bit of work a little while ago. Both the White Sox and the Cubbies have done, you know, added new managers and added players. But what about the San Diego Padres? The Padres in the last 2 days have acquired Will Myers from the Rays, Matt Kemp from the Dodgers, and Justin Upton from Atlanta.
Yeah.
I mean, they've given up 12 prospects, but they appear to be going for it. Do they not?
They look about as wanting to go for it as you can possibly get at this point. And it's funny, you go and take a look at the history of the San Diego Padres. They've been in Major League Baseball. They've been a National League team since 1969.
Yep.
You know how many times they've made the playoffs?
Twice.
Five times.
Okay.
Since 1969. Whoa, you really gave me a less trend.
They're terrible. They're terrible.
Five times. And they've been to two World Series. Give them credit for that. 1984. Yep. And then, of course, we remember the Trevor Hoffman year in 1998 where they were swept by the Yankees. But five times since 1969 they've made the playoffs. Like that is a very, very ominous looking stat when you take a look at it. Haven't made the playoffs since 2006, so we're talking about eight consecutive years out of the postseason for the San Diego Padres. If you've got a nice new park, you've got a gorgeous place to play, all of that. If you're going to keep yourself relevant, you have to have it's kind of
gorgeous ballpark.
Oh, gorgeous park.
Oh.
It's kind of the moment that the Toronto Blue Jays kind of came to a couple years ago. They're like, you know what? If we're going to want to stay relevant, we've got to make a move. And Alex Anthopoulos made some bold, bold moves. Not to say J.P. Ricciardi didn't try and make bold moves prior, but when Alex Anthopoulos went out and made that big trade with Florida, and when he went out and acquired R.A. Dickey and so on and so forth, he was making a bold move that was talked about in Major League Baseball. Well, what's happening right now, the Jays have signed Russell Martin, and they've been somewhat but that's the San Diego Padres this year. Like, what they've done in the last 72 hours is, you know, the bold moves that everybody's going to be buzzing about until, you know, first pitch is thrown in April.
Well, and they've already gotten another catcher. We got one from Oakland and Derek Norris. They went out and got a utility man out of Boston and Will Middlebrooks. What is the question that I have? It's positional players. Can you go for it without adding arms? Now, I got to be honest with you. I don't profess to know the ins and outs of the bullpen, their starting rotation. But the excitement here is all about positional players. Mm-hmm. Yet we all know that come October, it's your arms that carry you. Are they done?
They won just 77 games last year. And, I mean, they haven't added a ton in that respect. So, I mean, it's tough for me to, because I'm kind of with you. I mean, are we going to sit here and start breaking down the San Diego Padres and pitchers in the system and their bullpen? No, we're not going to be able to
do
that.
But there's nothing that suggests, am I missing something? Or were we all sitting around here last year going, wow, if only the Padres had help in the outfield. They're wasting all of these really good pitchers. I don't remember that conversation.
No, me neither.
Right? You know, so are they done? And do they not have to go out and maybe, you know, add to the bullpen? Or because you're right, you look at what Toronto did a couple of years ago, but Toronto mixed in some they had a little bit of everything.
Mark Burley was
right?
in there, Josh Johnson right. was in there, and R.A. Dickey was in there. So there were three pitchers that joined the team and kind of redid their rotation, plus Jose Reyes. And
right.
Plus, but you're right. I mean, this is a little bit different. This is Upton. This is Kemp. This is, you know, you're looking at your outfield. You're looking at position players. I'm very curious about it. They've spent a lot of money. They've brought in a lot of salary. They've given up a lot of their future to make these moves in the last couple of days. And, yeah, that's the number one thing that I think a lot of people will be talking about. Okay, you've made some bold moves. Now, is your rotation going to be able to keep pace with your position players and some of the moves you're able to make this offseason?
Yeah, just a quick scan. I see Ross, in terms of ERA, would be up there. But it looks like he's their closer. Baseball's their offseason is wild, right? And I know there's a lot of people that'll tell you it's wild because they don't have a salary cap. So every once in a while, a team can go berserk and spend money.
Mm-hmm.
But San Diego is not known as a team that goes berserk and spends money.
That's the most
Isn't
interesting
that?
Thing to me.
Yeah.
That was the team that went out and did it. Because I think for us, we know that Toronto's talked about for so long spending the money, and we work for the parent company, and we know how much money Rogers has and all of that. So to see the Blue Jays go out and make those moves they did a couple summers ago wasn't the most surprising thing in the world. But if you were to say who's going to be the big mover-shaker team this winter in Major League Baseball, I think a lot of people would maybe have looked elsewhere before going to San Diego.
Or maybe the Padres have the line on a couple of Cuban pitchers.
Right.
Maybe we can tie it up
ahead of
in
the curve.
A nice little bow. The Calgary Flames and the Dallas Stars coming up at the top of the hour. We'll take a top of the hour.
Ooh, they're going early tonight.
What time would you like to play the game?
I've got Jim Neal coming on in the second intermission, apparently, as opposed to the pregame show.
And thank you for throwing that out. Jim Neal, the general manager of the Dallas Stars, will be in studio at 6:10 on Flames warm-up. Top of the hour, we'll get into the 4 o'clock hour, which has some visits. We've got Eric, and Derek today. A lot to do, but when we come back, further set up this game tonight between the Stars and the Flames. Sportsnet 960, the Fan.
Home for Boomer and Warner in the morning. Jim Rome, Hockey Central, The Big Show, and tons of play. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
The Big Show brought to you by The Comedy Cave. Laugh in 2015 at the New Year's Eve Gala. Dinner shows feature three of North America's funniest comics, just $48 per person. Get your tickets now at comedycave.com.
I think it depends on the team. You know, there's some guys that like to try to sneak in behind you, and they wait for the puck to bounce, the right way. And then there's guys that play, they want to be in front of you and play defensive. So, it's just a matter of being aware of who's on the ice and what type of player they are.
TJ Brody, part of the Flames' top defensive pairing, shutdown pairing, if you will, along with Mark Giordano, and you suspect they are going to get their fill tonight of Jamie Benn and Tyler Seguin, and probably whoever else is Jason Spezza. They're probably going to get a couple of shifts out there against those guys.
That's bad company.
Wow. The puns, they are a-flying.
Proud of that one.
You should be. The Calgary Flames have not won in 6 games. The Dallas Stars have lost once in their last 4 games, coming off a 2-0 shutout in Vancouver. The particulars in this are that there's not a lot to really separate these two clubs statistically, except for the fact that the Dallas Stars have fallen off the face of the earth when it comes to goals against.
Yeah.
3.4 a game. Dead last in the National Hockey League. Even the Oilers give up less goals than they do.
This is one of those games that I wonder. Now, I don't know if it's going to play out this way, but this is one of those games that might be ripe for a comeback for the Flames, in that the Stars historically do not, in the last five or so years, whether it be Mark Crawford as their head coach, Glenn Gulletson, or now Lindy Ruff, they don't defend well. And when you don't defend well, you can score. Clearly, the Stars can. But when you don't defend well, you don't protect leads very well. And the Flames chase very effectively. When they're down and when they can start activating Brody and Geo and Weidman and Russell even more than they already do, it can lead to scoring opportunities and can lead to goals. So if Dallas is up 2-0 after 20 minutes of playing this game, my advice would be to not worry as much as if it was the Canucks up 2-0 on you or something like that. So that's one thing that I'll be interested to see if the game even plays out that way. And number two, let's see if Calgary is able to exploit that without having to fall from behind. If they can get Dallas on their heels and really make it so they have to start to chase and you can start to take advantage of them even more. It's a very curious game, knowing the urgency level the Flames have and the way Dallas has played over the bulk of this season. It's a very interesting game tonight.
What I'm, you know, you can't take things for granted or look at history and go, well, that's going to happen for sure. Mm-hmm. What has been weird about Dallas and Calgary is for the last little while, once a year, these two teams throw a bunch of goals up on the board. Last year, we mentioned Dallas came in here and beat the bejesus out of the Flames. I mean, Sagan and Ben were just incredible. I think that was, what, a 7-2 or
7-3, I believe
right.
It was.
And then the year before that, in the lockout shortened season, remember Calgary laid a whooping on the Dallas Stars. Mike Camilleri had the hat trick, and I think that's the last time Leland Irving won a hockey game in the National Hockey League. So for whatever reason, there is a game a year that these two teams play where it gets silly.
Well, go back. Do you remember I think it was a 5-4 game? I think in the 2010, it was Steve Staios scored a shorthanded goal that was
sure.
The winner. Like that,
yeah, and
that
it
game,
was here, right?
It was here, yeah. It was bizarre.
You know, and that all that is coincidence, I'll grant you that. Oh, speaking of former Flame goalies, you see who got called up today?
No.
I know why.
Give me some, don't tell me. Give me some hints.
Just happy to be there.
Joey?
Yep.
Really?
Yep. Montreal Canadiens assigned Dustin Tokarski to Hamilton for conditioning. So they brought up Joey. So Joey McDonald's in Montreal backing up Carey Price.
Wow.
I never thought I would say that.
Jeez. That may be one of the biggest surprises of the season.
I mean, it is what it is, but yeah, Joey McDonald got called up.
Concrete blonde, eh?
Yeah, exactly.
Good for him.
For the Flames tonight, let's talk a little bit about the roster. No Matt Stajan.
Let's talk more about Joey.
Because you didn't see that coming.
No, it's
a Festivus miracle. Matt Stajan out of the lineup. Brandon Bolig coming back in. What are the lines looking like, Pat? Did they jostle much? Have they changed? It's the same six defensemen playing again, which disappoints me a little bit. I wanted to see Corey Potter thrown into the mix.
I'm hoping he does get in at some point. I would like to see Corey Potter get an opportunity to play at some point, but the same six defensemen, so I don't think anything will change there.
I imagine we'll see a change tomorrow, though.
It sounds like that would make sense. I mean, nothing has been said that would suggest, but sounds
that's probable, possible.
Plausible.
Plausible.
That's a good way. Plausible. Not probable,
but plausible.
Certainly. Plausible sounds more like it's a concept as opposed to black and white. And my guess would be that the lines don't change much either. Stajan out, Bolig back in. So my guess would be Boma moves back to the middle between Raymond and Bolig. And then the other three lines stay the same. Colburn, Monahan, Jones, Juris between Gaudreau and Hudler, and then Glenn Cross, Byron flanking Granlund. That would be my guess. They didn't run lines at morning skate today because it was for the first time all year was an optional morning skate, which was kind of odd. No Giordano, no Glenn Cross, no Weidman at morning skate today. They've usually been totally fully attended, and they've been basically the same formula all year the way that Bob Hartley's ran his morning skate. So six-game losing skid. In fact, you're playing three games in four nights. Maybe you think about changing it up a little bit.
Yeah, and I like it. I got to be honest with you. I like it. I think if you get too dictator-like or you start ruling with an iron fist at this time, that doesn't help, and you want the players invested in it. We're talking about veterans. I mean, they know how to prepare. They know what they need to prepare. And this team has played a lot of hockey, Pat. I mean, they've played three more games than the Dallas Stars have, and they've played more games than a lot of teams have. They're going to play three games in four nights. I don't think this is the time to make everything mandatory.
Certainly starts to slow down for them in January.
Yes, it does.
They play January 2nd, then not again to January 7th. Then they'll play January 10th, and not again until January 15th. And that's not even the All-Star break, which comes up. So they've got a few four-day breaks in the month of January, so things get a little more spread out for them. And that's maybe when some of these teams with the games in hand will start to not catch up, but the standings
will play
those
games.
Exactly. Yeah. So we'll start to have a better idea as to where the Flames stand heading into February. But yeah, it gets a whole lot less busy in the month of January because November and December have been nuts for Calgary. They've been playing a lot of games.
And you know what they say about games in hand, Pat?
They're only games in hand if you win them.
That's exactly it.
Believe what they say.
One last one on the game tonight. It will be Jonas Hiller. Kai Ramo did skate, though, today, and I think it's worth noting because yesterday didn't skate immediately. We all asked the same question.
Was it the mumps?
Was it the mumps? No mumps here, although the mumps continues to be a story elsewhere. It is not going away. Not sure the Dallas Stars have had any issues to this point.
No, not yet.
They've been one of the teams that's kind of stayed off the radar. But here we head into Christmas, and the mumps, one of the biggest storylines in the National Hockey League. The other thing, while we're talking about health-related issues, we did hear from Michael Backlund today, spoke to the media. What did he say?
He's been skating for 3 days, been able to ramp up his physical activity over the last 3 weeks. He's feeling good, no pain, has had a procedure, an arthroscopic procedure. The doctor says that no guarantee it's going to make it go away forever, but it's allowed him to start working out again. So he's feeling good, hoping to be back as soon as possible, but doesn't have a timeline yet to return. So still week to week on the Michael Backlund front.
Came in early this morning, and he was out skating, and he was gingerly, I would say the best way to put it.
I think the biggest thing is conditioning, skating at the pace, because he wasn't able to work out prior to these last 3 weeks. Like, he's getting back in. You've got to be in elite shape to play in the National Hockey League, and it takes some time to get your body back to that peak level of performance. So I think that's going to be the biggest challenge for him, getting himself back to that ability to, you know, your cardiovascular level to be able to go out and play 20 minutes or 15 minutes of NHL hockey on any given night. We'll see how long it takes him to ramp that back up.
Coming up, Flames warm-up at 6 o'clock. Tell me a little bit about what you got on the program.
6:10 p.m., the general manager of the Dallas Stars, Hannah Alberta's own Jim Nill, is going to join us here in the Hot Stove Lounge. Conversation with Derek Englund, who played his highest amount in terms of minutes on New York for the first time since mid-November. So he got his ice time ramped up against the Rangers on Tuesday night. We'll take a look at this Flames team, why they have lost six in a row, how they can snap it, and a little bit more on Bob Hartley's contract extension, all coming up on Flames warm-up tonight.
Where did you say Blake Nill? Well, Blake Nill's now in Vancouver. Where's Jim Nill from?
Hannah.
Would you put him in the Alberta Hockey Hall of Fame?
Yeah.
Will you fill out the nomination forms? Because they have to be in by January 30th.
Would you like me to?
Would you like to see him in the Alberta Hockey Hall of Fame?
Yes.
Then you should.
Okay.
Because we're going to have a conversation coming up in the 4 o'clock hour. Scott Robinson will join us. He is the man now putting together a committee.
I tip my hat to you on that one. That was a good segue.
You like that? Hockey Alberta Foundation and the Hockey Alberta is soliciting nominations.
As opposed to?
For the Alberta Hockey Hall of Fame.
Jim Nill's a good man, and so is Eric DeHatchik. He's a good man. He'll join us.
Could have done that.
You could have, and you have before.
Where did you say Jim Nill was from?
From Hannah.
Eric DeHatchik's been to Hannah.
See, that would be less impressive than the one.
No, but my question is, would you put, because that's one of the things.
No, but that was like an actual well-connected, well-linked segue.
I've only been waiting for about an hour to do it.
Oh.
And I got to use it.
Oh, so that's been planned out.
So Scott Robinson
less
from
impressive.
The Hockey Alberta Foundation and the Alberta Hockey Hall of Fame Committee will join us. Because what we really want to do here is get people thinking about it. Because the nominations come from the public. Who would you like to see? Who do you think should be in the Alberta Hockey Hall of Fame? It's been around for a long time, but it doesn't get talked a lot about. That's going to change here in the near future. As well, we get into Eric, and Derek. Eric DeHatchik at 4:45 from the Globe and Mail, Globe Sports. Eric Francis from everything, Jack FM, Calgary Sun, Sportsnet. Derek Wills, radio voice of the Calgary Flames, will join us. And then Lance Boma. We'll go one-on-one with Lance Boma, talking about a couple of stats he's amongst league leaders in, block shots and hits. That's all coming up here on your home of the Calgary Flames, Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Boudreau brings through, makes a great move, shoots, and he scores! What a shot by Johnny Hockey!
Calgary Flames Radio.
Brody to Giordano, and he scores!
Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Friday night hockey in Calgary when the Dallas Stars come to the Dome. Get your weekend started right with the Flames warm-up pregame show at 6. Play-by-play at 7. Flames at Dallas Stars. On air every time the Flames hit the ice.
Hi, this is Mark Giordano. Catch every game all season long on Calgary Flames Radio, Sportsnet 960 The Fan.